Well, hello! It's Friday morning and time for the Mad Money Machine Show. We will be talking about the economy, your investments, your savings, your plans for the future over the next hour. And this is Paul Boyer. So I invite you to join me, stay with the show for the hour, and if you like, give me a call and ask a question, make a comment, a criticism, send me a bill. Do whatever you want. Just call 571-366-7121. That's 571-366-7121. Or you can send me a question or a comment. The email address is feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Well, welcome to the Mad Money Machine. That opening is a tribute to Harry Brown and his Money Talk radio show, which I've been listening to. You can go to his website, Harry Brown with an E on the end of it, .org, and look at the archives and download all of his radio shows. He did a political show on Saturdays, and then on Sundays he did Money Talk for about an hour. And I'm up to show 11 out of 44. No, let's see. No, actually, I'm up to show 17 out of 44 Money Talk episodes. And enjoying it quite well, learning a lot. I'll be playing a little snippet out of one of his shows a little later in this show. We will have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. I'll tell you about my Edamonics headphones. I'm going to ask you what I should do with my Facebook account. I'll play for you the Keynes versus Hayek hip-hop song, which you've probably heard it before, but you can't listen to it often enough, I'm sure. We'll talk about some new exchange-traded funds to get you in some exotic precious metals. I'll mention a way to get precious metals a little bit more cheaply than you might otherwise do. Oh, and I've got a cool tool for you from the Mad Money Machine Tool Crib, so let's get right into it. First thing is my Edamonics headphones. These are the headphones that I use with the iPhone. You know, I was wanting some really good quality earphones, in-the-ear earphones, to take with me with my iPhone to listen to all the podcasts that I listen to. These are actually on the expensive side. I didn't like them when I first got them compared to the sound of the other ones, which I think are called Radius. Compared to the sound of the Radius, the Edamonics didn't have quite the low end in the frequencies, didn't have the bass response, I thought. But the form factor, the fit and finish of the Edamonics headphones, I think really makes up for it. In fact, if I held them both up in my hands, dangling down, the Radius on the left, the Edamonics on the right, you'd see quite a difference. The Radius ones cost me about, what, $35? And actually, one pair I had broke so quickly that I mailed it back to them, and then they sent me a new pair. And that second pair is just in shambles. The plastic that they make the cord with just doesn't hold up to wear. It breaks off. Both earpieces, I can see bare wire connecting to the earpiece itself, and at the wide junction, it's all the plastic is brittle and breaking. Now compare that to the Edamonics, which the cord doesn't have the plastic feel; it actually has more of a rubber feel to it. And very sturdy. The cord. I've been using these things for a long, long time. And you just can't tell any difference that's been used, other than one small thing. I went out to an event about a week or so ago. Drove about 30 minutes to get to this place. And it was a kind of event where I just stood around for a while. So I took my iPhone with me, and I have my... Usually I carry my headphone wrapped around my neck as a place, not all the way around like a noose, but just hanging over my shoulders as a way to carry it. Had my iPhone with me. For some reason, I didn't have the headphones plugged into the iPhone. I got back home, pulled out my iPhone to listen to something, my headphones weren't there, weren't around my shoulders anymore. And I got to thinking and backtracing, and when was the last time I felt them around my shoulders? And it was when I parked at that event. And I'll just bet you that's where they are. So I got in the car. You know, these things are expensive enough. It was worth it to me to get in the car and drive back there to see if I dropped them somewhere on the ground. These things, I think they cost about $140, $150, give or take, you know, your wholesale versus retail prices. Well, sure enough, I got back to the event with my flashlight, looked around on the ground, and I found them. Found them laying right in the middle of the street, and picked them up, and the ear pieces were broken. Both of them. Snapped, broke the plastic part of the earpiece after it connects to the rubberized cord. Both of them were broken. I could see bare wires hanging down. One of them was actually the extension which the little flange connects onto. The extension was broken off. And what a bummer. You know, the good news is I found them. The bad news is they're all broken. Well, I got home, got out a little tube of super glue, glued these things back together, the little piece of plastic, glued the flange earpiece back onto the tube stub, and they are almost as good as new. Even the little button that you use to pause playback on a podcast, the little button on the right ear cord where you, when you touch it, it pauses or answers a call. Well, it doesn't click anymore. It's just a mushy, you know, you press, it's like you're pressing against something and there's no feedback to it. That got run over by a car apparently too. But it still works. And so I'm still using them. You know, so able to save, I guess in a sense, I'm able to save another $150 from buying a new pair. But I think they're pretty good headphones. I still don't know about the bass response. What I do know is I do hear ringing in my ears from time to time. Tinnitus. You've heard about ringing in your ears. And I think that I need to turn down the volume. I've been playing podcasts on the lowest possible setting. One bar of volume shows up when I listen to these things. And now I'm getting to the point where I have to pull the headphones out of my ear a little bit to make it even a little softer in volume and see if that cures the ringing in the ears. You know, first reading glasses, then hearing loss. It's getting old. Well, I have a Facebook account. I have my own personal Facebook account, you know, Paul Boyer. And I originally had everybody just befriend me there. And I just don't understand how I should be using this thing. I've got a group page for Mad Money Machine. And I've got a now I've started this fan page for Mad Money Machine. I'm trying to find a place where you can hook up to me through Facebook and see whatever postings that are appropriate for the Mad Money Machine to post without getting y'all mixed up in my own business. You know, you don't care about me and what I'm doing. You just want to find out about the Mad Money Machine, right? So I don't know whether to steer you towards the group page or to the fan page. If anybody's a Facebook expert and knows the difference between group pages and fan pages, could you email me, feedback@madmanmachine.com, and let me know what the best way to go is. I mean, I've got Twitter figured out, you know, twitter.com/madmanmachine, and I make postings there. But I don't understand how, you know, all these various media organizations say, subscribe to our Twitter feed, even the PGA Tour. You can subscribe to their Twitter feed. If you're a Twitter listener, how do you read all of this stuff that goes by? The enormity of these 140-character messages going by, how do you ever see the one that you're supposed to see from the PGA Tour or from CNN.com or whatever? There's so many tweets that go by. How do you ever make sense of it all? How do you get anything important out of it? Maybe my problem is I've just, everybody that subscribed to Mad Money Machine, I just subscribed to them back. And now I'm getting all this junk from everybody. So I guess that's another thing I don't understand really how to work after all. What I do know how to work is a spreadsheet. And last time I talked about the lazy portfolios and how I optimized for Sharpe ratio. Well, come to find out there's another ratio that I'm going to be exploring a little bit more called the Sortino ratio. The Sharpe ratio measures the top leftedness of an investment based upon its return versus risk on a chart. You know, how much return are you getting versus the risk that you've taken in a investment? That's the Sharpe ratio. But risk, in that sense, is measured by its standard deviation, how much the investment swings down or up or down. Notice, up is included in the risk. Well, if you ask me, the amount that an investment swings to the positive side doesn't seem like a negative thing. You know, we talk about higher risk being a negative thing. But if an investment is swinging up and then swinging up again and swinging up again and swinging up again real big, a large standard deviation, but always in the positive direction, I don't mind that. I don't mind that a bit. But it penalizes you in Sharpe ratio. So that's where Sortino ratio comes in. It measures, penalizes down big downward swings, but doesn't penalize upward swings in investments. So I'm going to be taking a look over the coming weeks and months and let you know a little bit more about the Sortino ratio. Speaking of things that I've talked about in the past, last show was called iPad Predictions. And if you haven't listened to that one, go back and listen to it. I listened to it again after the iPad announcement on Wednesday. And I got to tell you, I got a lot of things right about my predictions. I got the name right. That's pretty significant. I got the size right, 10 inches, 9.7 to be exact. I said it was a Honey, I Blew Up the iPhone. And it is exactly. It's an iPod Touch on a big scale. It actually runs the iPhone OS operating system, which is a problem. Because, like people are saying, if you want to listen to Pandora and then also work on your spreadsheet at the same time, can't do it on the iPad. Now, I've heard rumors that iPhone OS 4, when it comes out, might have a way to do some multitasking. And maybe, since this thing's not coming out for another 60 days, 58 days now, maybe they will put in place by that time the new iPhone OS that will give us a little bit of multitasking. Give us the ability to have a couple, three maybe, applications all running at the same time. There's no reason why it shouldn't be able to be done on the iPad with the large processor that it has in it, very fast. But it's just a matter of figuring out how the user interface would work to allow me to switch between them, start and stop one, and things like that. I got to say, even I think I even got pretty close on the price. I said it would start out at $899 and go down to $699. And it turns out that I was in that price, I was including the 3G functionality. And their prices for the 3G would be between $829 and $629. So I was $70 off. But then you got to buy the external keyboard, which is $70. And you got to buy the little case, which is the stand, which I talked about. You'd be able to stand the thing up like a picture frame. This instead of is just a case, which makes sense. It's like the Kindle's case, which you can flick back on itself and lay it down on a desk or stand it up vertical. So I think I did pretty good there on the predictions. There was a couple things I missed. There aren't any USB connectors. The only way to get a USB hooked into it is through an adapter into the docking part. And of course, the big miss was the cameras. I had hoped there were three cameras on the thing. Back, front, and even side. Of course, they're not going to do a side camera. They didn't do a front-facing camera, and they didn't do a back-facing camera either. No camera on the device at all. And the final disappointment is the lack of a true GPS in the thing. Now, it has the GPS over the Wi-Fi. It has a compass in it, but it doesn't have the true radio that reads the satellite signals that determine where it is on the ground. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works. I'm looking forward to seeing it. And we'll probably end up having one in the house somewhere along the way. Well, there's a new couple of exchange-traded funds out there. If you're getting bored with GLD, gold, and you're getting bored with SLV, the silver exchange-traded fund, now you can also get into platinum and palladium. The platinum exchange-traded fund is PPLT, that's the ticker symbol, and palladium, PALL, conveniently enough. And as of today, they're kind of back down to where they started about a month ago, maybe a few weeks ago. They went up and kind of came back down. I don't necessarily recommend, I'm not making any recommendations whatsoever as to whether to get in or not of this. One thing I'll tell you about some of the things I've listened to in Harry Brown's show, he says you don't need to diversify into other metals. There was actually a question that came into one of his callers, and they asked him, should I, you know, instead of just gold, should I diversify into silver and platinum and palladium and all these other things? He said, no, gold is the only one of those that's actually still money. And gold is the only one of those that actually responds the way that it should respond during times of inflation. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. Let's play a round now of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Madman Machine Show 174 is Richard Mayberry. Well, Richard Mayberry writes a newsletter called the Early Warning Report, and I think he's been doing it for many, many years. Here's one of the things that happened to me the other day. I was reading one of Harry Brown's books, and I've looked back through them and I can't find it, so I must be mistaken about this, but I thought I was reading one of his books, and back in the appendix area, the bibliography, he pointed to some of the websites, some of the newsletters that he likes to read, and one of them was from this guy, Richard Mayberry, and his Early Warning Report. And actually pointed to the website, earlywarningreport.com. So I filed that away in the back of my brain. Then I went and looked out at Harry Brown's website of the radio archives, and it turns out in one of his radio shows, he interviewed Richard Mayberry. So I filed that away. I thought that was pretty interesting. I came back to my desk, and sitting on my desk was a book that I had already bought that I found out from someplace, I don't know where. The name of the book was Whatever Happened to Penny Candy. And I looked down at the author's name, and believe it or not, it was Richard Mayberry. And I thought, wow, this is crazy coincidences. Maybe not that crazy coincidences. I mean, if you follow around in the same circles, you tend to run into the same people, right? But that's the coincidences that have happened with Richard Mayberry. And come to find out that Richard Mayberry, within the last year, has started a YouTube channel. So now he gets on the YouTube and talks about his thoughts about the economy and precious metals and what's happening in the world. And it turns out that on that show that Harry Brown interviewed him, Richard Mayberry actually said that he does endorse Harry Brown's permanent portfolio. He thinks that's one of the really the best strategies for investing, where you have one quarter in each type of economic cycle that might happen. And you just don't worry about predicting the future. You don't listen to the TV, radio, and podcasts like this one anymore. You just invest one quarter. If it gets out of balance, more than 35% in any one, you put it back in balance. Take a look at it once a year and go on about your business. Well, on these YouTube videos that Richard Mayberry has produced, he has one on there that talks about precious metals and how to invest. Now, he actually recommends investing in more than just gold. He recommends putting a third of your precious metals investment into gold, a third into silver, and a third into platinum. And he actually took it a bit further in one of his YouTube channels. He said that in the event of something really that breaks down, that silver is going to be the one that's used as money again. His favorite silver form factor is the dime, the pre-1965 dime. He was showing in this video how if you had a bar of silver, that you could take a drill, drill out the insides of it, you know, fill it back up with lead or something, and then smooth over the outside to make it look whole again. He says, you know, guys can do this and it looks absolutely perfect, but the inside of it is full of this non-silver metal. He says, but so you can do that with a bar of silver, but with a coin, the time it takes to drill out the inside of a coin is just not worth the amount of silver that you're going to get out of it, obviously. You know, if you're going to want to commit fraud, you want to do it in an efficient way, right? And the dime being so small is very much harder to commit fraud against. So he recommends stocking up on pre-1965 dimes as a good insurance against total economic collapse. He recommends then a quarter of your precious metals in gold, a quarter in platinum, and then the other half then in silver. He mentions in the video about precious metals that gold is much harder to forge than, say, silver, because it's one of the heaviest metals. And as metals get heavier, they get more valuable. So you can't really fill up a bar of gold with something else and make it just as heavy without being just as precious, without being just as expensive. I mean, you could fill it up with platinum, but platinum's more expensive than gold at this point. So that's why gold is not as easily forged, although I've heard stories in the media about gold bars in various places being drilled out and filled up with tungsten. Tungsten probably comes pretty close to being the weight of gold and not nearly as precious or valuable. But he showed also the thing I've talked about several shows ago, this fish tester for gold coins. I bought a fish tester off eBay. I think I paid $70 for these little pieces of plastic. If you buy it from their website, it's well over that, more than that. But the little tester, he demonstrates it. You take your gold coin and you do three tests with this little piece of plastic. The first is you slide the coin through this slot. If it slides through that slot, then you know the coin is not bigger than what it's supposed to be. You put the coin into this round cavity that fits just the size of the diameter of the coin. You know that it's not bigger than it's supposed to be. And then you set it on a flat surface, and if it tips down, that coin is heavy enough to be gold. Pure gold. And it's heavy enough, it's small enough, that you know it's not some other metal that's fashioned into that size of a coin. So he demonstrates that. Richard Mayberry goes on to talk about other economic things. He's quite bearish on the outlook for the United States and the dollar, and which is one of the things I've taken away from Harry Brown's show. You know, Harry Brown passed away in March of 2006, coming up on 4 years ago now. The radio shows of his I've been listening to are from 2004, 2005, so 5 or 6 years old. And in some of the radio shows that he has, he talks about people's notion that the dollar will collapse. And this was kind of news to me, that 6 years ago people were talking about the collapse of the dollar. But he mentions that, he says, you know, people have been predicting the collapse of the dollar for a long time now. He says, with the government and the Federal Reserve printing money and going out of control and these unfunded liabilities, Social Security and Medicare, reaching into $40 to $70 trillion, people have been saying that the dollar's going to collapse. China's going to eventually sell off their dollar holdings and it's going to start a spiral of interest rates. He says, but you know, people have been saying that in the 90s too. And people have been saying that in the 80s. And people have been saying that in the 70s. He says, people have been saying that for as long as I've been listening. All the way back into the 60s, people have been talking about the ultimate collapse of the dollar. He says, it's okay to predict that, but getting the timing on that is the impossible thing to do. Well, it's very interesting to listen to that, especially in these times. I wish he were alive today. I know that his associates are still alive. I wish he were alive to tell us what he thinks about the environment today, and if he's changed his mind about his permanent portfolio fund at all, or if he has changed his mind on the inescapability of the dollar's collapse and the timing of that. His colleagues still go on. John Chandler took up the mantle of his Money Talk show for a long while, and I see that has ended within the last few months. I was subscribing to that podcast still. Still played that music, by the way, which I played at the beginning of this show. That music is the music Harry Brown had on his Money Talk show. And Terry Coxon, another associate of Harry Brown's, who's originally started the Permanent Portfolio Fund and got out of that and did some other things, written some books about investing and so forth. They're still around, so maybe they have the same outlook as Harry Brown would. Maybe Richard Mayberry, our guru, has the same outlook that Harry Brown would have if he were still alive. Well, he is our guru on Mad Men Machine Show 174. Congratulations, Richard Mayberry. Music here, the music I used at the beginning of this show was the music that Harry Brown used on his Money Talk show. It's from Bob Crosby, opening theme called Come Back, Sweet Papa. And actually, at the end of the show, he uses the same ending of that song, which I'll use at the end of the show, too. He talked about how he liked Dixieland jazz. He liked the inventiveness of each band member. You know, they just start playing and improvise something. He liked it better than modern jazz, which they have a more structured approach to playing the songs. So, a tribute to Harry Brown. Now, I want to play a little segment out of one of Harry Brown's Money Talk shows where he talked about the broken window fallacy. Let's have a listen.
And so I ought to be in there buying some S&P 500 index funds or some other way to try to profit from the rising stock market that will come from the prosperity created by war. Everybody knows that wars are good for the economy. Well, everybody may know that, but it isn't true. And this fallacy was first debunked 150 years ago by a French economist named Frédéric Bastiat. And Bastiat is known mostly for his book, a little short book called The Law, which deals with what's right and what's wrong in legislation and government and things of this sort. But he also wrote a number of essays on economics, and they have been put together in a book called Economic Sophisms. And a very famous essay of his was called The Things That Are Seen and The Things That Are Not Seen. And boy, does this have a lot to do with investing. The things that are seen and the things that are not seen. And the example that he used was that times are tough, people are out of work, so forth and so on, and some kid throws a rock through the window of a store. And the people who are standing around and see that cheer, because now this means that there's going to be some work available for the glazier. He's going to come and have to put in new glass there and so forth, and the shopkeeper will have to pay for this new glass, and it will give somebody a job that doesn't have a job. And this, of course, is what is seen. What is not seen is that the money that the storekeeper is going to have to spend now for a new window, he would have spent perhaps with the tailor getting a new suit. Or maybe he would have spent it, in modern terms, on a new VCR, or in some other way. And if he wasn't going to spend it at all, he'd put it in the bank, and the bank would lend it to somebody who was going to spend it, or lend it to a company that was going to invest it in some way. In other words, what was not seen was just as important as what was seen. And what was seen was very superficial, and no new jobs have been created at all by the broken window. And this has come to be known as the broken window fallacy. Now, the important thing here is that if the storekeeper could have kept the money he had to spend on the broken window, if he could have kept that money and spent it on what he wanted to spend it on, he would be better off than he was before. He would have had everything he had before, plus the new VCR, or the new suit, or whatever it was. But now, he will spend that money, and he will be no better off than he was before, because all he's doing is replacing the window that he did have before. And there are no net new jobs in the community, because whoever is going to fix the window is just taking the place of whoever was going to make the suit or deliver the VCR. All right. Many, many years after that, almost 100 years later, a fellow named Henry Hazlitt updated Bastiat's work, or I shouldn't say updated it. He was inspired by Bastiat's work, and he wrote a book called Economics in One Lesson. Very, very good book. And it is very useful for investing. It will not tell you what to invest in. It will not tell you when to invest. But it will give you a good economic background that will help you see through some of the fallacies that are presented in the investment world. And in the prologue to Economics in One Lesson, Hazlitt points out that the art of economics is in seeing the long-term consequences of an act rather than just the short-term consequences, and in seeing the things that are not seen in front of you as well as seeing the things that are seen. In other words, he was taking Bastiat's maxim and applying it to modern things, and every chapter thereafter deals with a fallacy, and the first one that he dealt with was the broken window fallacy, as presented by Bastiat almost 100 years before. Now, this is very, very important, as it has to do with war. War is not good for the economy. War is bad for the economy. Let me give you the short answer to this whole question. First, as postulated by Thomas Woods in an article, The Myth of Wartime Prosperity, that is in the Freeman. And on my website, on the Radio Links page, I will put links to both Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson and also to the Foundation for Economic Education, where you can subscribe to the Freeman. Thomas Wood's article, The Myth of Wartime Prosperity, ends with the paragraph, quote, "Common sense is right after all. Death and destruction do not lead to prosperity. That should be obvious. But as George Orwell once said, we have now sunk to a depth on which restatement of the obvious is the first duty of intelligent men." So take this with you through the break. How could death and destruction make the economy better? What we want is creation and production, not death and destruction. And I'll explain this a little bit more because it has to do with such things as hurricanes and other natural disasters too, which supposedly, believe it or not, some people think is good for the economy. We'll be right back. This is Harry Brown.
All right, well, I'll let that go on a little longer than what I had originally anticipated, but I couldn't find a good place to cut it off other than there when he took a break. You can listen to the entire show if you go to harrybrown.org. Brown has an E on the end of it. That is the show from 2004, December the 5th. It's the 16th show that he did. He talks about his war, good for the economy, and he talks a little bit about investing in gold in that show. Well, I think, you know, the easy way to talk about this broken window fallacy is that if a kid throws a rock through the window, the baker, the guy who owns the store, the bakery, he has a net zero. He doesn't. In fact, you can almost say it's a minus one, but let's call it a net zero gain. The glazier, the guy that fixes the window, he has a one, net one gain. So in net, you add the zero to the one, the total economy has a net of one gain. On the other hand, if the baker was able to buy a suit from the tailor, the baker has a one gain. He has the suit. The tailor has a one gain. He got the money from the baker. So you add the two together for the entire economy, it's a two. The baker's one, the tailor's one. The net economy, the net gain in the economy is two. So it's the seen and the unseen. You have to add the unseen together with the seen in order to find out the net for the entire economy. And Harry Brown went on to extrapolate and talk about war, and then he talked about natural disasters and how they were good for certain pieces of the economy. But what you're not seeing is the things that could have been done for the good with the money otherwise. If we hadn't spent it on war or fixing hurricane-destroyed homes, we could have spent it on other good things or invested it in stocks and put it in the bank or whatever, but it would have been a net for the person that had the money, and on balance, the economy would have been better off. Well, I listened to that show for the first time this past Wednesday, the 27th of January, and coincidentally, it was right before the State of the Union address. Now, I had paused the show about at the same point where I was at with you right now. I had paused Harry Brown's show, and I went around, did some things. Then I turned on the State of the Union address with the president speaking. And one of the things that the president said during the speech was, he said, "Talk to the window manufacturer in Philadelphia who said he used to be skeptical about the Recovery Act until he had to add two more work shifts just because of the business it created." And I got to thinking about, wow, is that the broken window fallacy all over again? Right there in the State of the Union address. I don't know. Well, I think I'll just keep rambling on and on this time. I may not do a show next week. So you got two for one. This is a twofer show. I want to talk about another fallacy that I read about in our local paper. Loudoun County is the first county in Virginia that has bought a hybrid school bus. They've bought a hybrid school bus. This is one of these, vehicles that it charges up a battery as it's driving. If it's going less than 25 miles an hour, it runs off battery power. Otherwise, it uses a little bit of gasoline. They said in the paper that most of the regular school buses get 8 miles to the gallon. And now this new hybrid bus would get 11 miles to the gallon. And so they expect to have some savings by driving these hybrid buses around. They want to test and see how much savings they would get. Now, toward the end of the article in the newspaper, they talked about the price of a normal school bus is about $100,000. The price of a hybrid school bus, about $160,000. So I plug that all into the spreadsheet, assuming gasoline prices at $3 a gallon, assuming the bus drives 300 miles a day to pick up kids, it would take 10 years to pay off the cost difference with the savings in the miles per gallon of the hybrid bus over the regular school buses. So just a little bit of economics. You know, coincidentally, too, I listened to a Mises.org podcast where I think it was Flo Lilly talked about the economics of recycling. If you're big into recycling, go out to the Mises.org and search for that podcast where they talk about the economics of recycling. What a mind opener that one was. I'll have a link to that, if I can find it, in the show notes of show 175 at the Mad Money Machine. Bottom line is, it doesn't seem to make economic sense to recycle. And she said, you know, as far as environmental concerns, they could put all this, you know, plastic stuffs in a landfill. And when it does make economic sense, in a few years down the road, they can go mine the landfill for all of the good, valuable plastics to be found therein. Berkshire Hathaway B shares split 50-1. The stock has gone up since then. I think two reasons. One is it's open to a lot more investors. I mean, a guy can now buy a share of Berkshire Hathaway for something like $75, $76 instead of the $3,000, $4,000 that it was before. So now he can, I guess, get the annual report a whole lot cheaper. So apparently that unleashed some demand for buying the stock, made Berkshire Hathaway go up. The other factor people are talking about is now this opens up Berkshire Hathaway to being included in the S&P 500 index of stocks. And when that happens, all of these mutual funds, the Vanguard S&P 500 index, the Fidelity S&P 500 index, the Schwab, the, you know, there's hundreds of S&P 500 index mutual funds, not to mention the total stock market funds, not to mention other funds that just want to buy it. They all need to include now Berkshire Hathaway in their portfolio of stocks if they want to replicate the index, which creates more demand for that stock, which apparently has created a price increase in Berkshire Hathaway. So, like I had mentioned before, maybe I'll sell 49 shares of Berkshire Hathaway, but then I got to pay a capital gains tax. Ugh, I don't think I want to do that. Talked a little bit earlier about buying precious metals, buying gold. This Bing thing is still working. The Bing cashback program still goes on. I think I had mentioned about a year ago where I had used that to buy a gold coin off of eBay. And Bing gave me money, gave me cash back for buying something off of eBay. Well, after a while, it didn't seem to work anymore. I don't know what happened. I guess I went over their limit or something. But I tried it again the other day. Went out to Bing, searched for gold coin. The top one that comes up is a link to eBay. You click on that, you go out to eBay. You find a gold coin with a buy it now technique. Instead of an auction, it's a buy it now. And you pay with PayPal. Bing, the Microsoft search engine, gives you 8% cash back after about 60 days. So let's say you buy a gold coin for $1,200. After 60 days, Bing will credit to your PayPal account $100. And if you're signed up properly on eBay, you can also earn eBay rewards. After about 3 months, they will credit your account. In this case, you'll probably get something like another $20 back. So $120, you're saving 10% on the gold coin that you bought. You're getting it almost at spot prices at this point. You're able to buy a gold coin, an Eagle, let's say an American Eagle gold coin, at spot, if you find the right deal on eBay using Bing Cashback. You have to go through all the various hoops of getting the PayPal account and getting a Bing account and having that linked up together and so forth. But, you know, for $100, it's kind of a good deal, I think. And it seems to work pretty well. No deer this year. During hunting season. Hunting season is over in many of the counties in Virginia. The county that I live in, Loudoun County, deer hunting continues through March, but we just don't, I don't know where to hunt. I don't know a place to go. I don't have any property to hunt on. I was going off into, what county was it, Clark County or something, where we paid a guy to be able to go out onto his 100 acres and sit there in the cold and look for the deer to show up. One did for me, wasn't able to pull the trigger on it. And so hunting season's over for me, and I didn't get a deer this year. So we'll see what happens next year. Kind of lost my fever for it by not being able to get one. I was hoping that my hunting buddy would get one while I was out there, and he'd show me how to do all the necessities to get it to the butcher. But didn't happen. Kind of disappointing. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, this is a tool. If you go onto the web and you like to read articles from websites and things, but, you know, some of these websites you get to, you have a column on the left with all these ads and flashing things, and you have a column on the right of the side of the text with all these flashing things, and then advertisements stuck in the middle of the article, and you got to scroll down, and it's just very distracting. Well, there is a free tool called Readability, which you can add into the bookmarked area of your web browser. You go to a website. Let me go find it for you. I'm basically going to Google search Readability. There's a website, lab.arc90.com/experiments/readability. You go out to that website, and you can select from settings of how you want to read the articles that you're going to be using Readability with. You can tell it what style you want, newspaper, novel, ebook. Basically, that's changing the background color of the text. There's new ones here, inverse and another one. Then you can select what size you want the text to be, very small or extra large. Then you can select how much of a margin you want. And with those three selections, over to the right, you select now the bookmarklet and add that to your browser. Basically, you just click on it and drag it up to the top of your browser. And this bookmarklet then appears up there at the top of your browser, waiting for you to click on it. Now, what you do with that bookmarklet? Let's say you go out to a website and you're reading an article. All the distracting advertisements on the left and right and middle and so forth. Well, you click on the Readability button right there, and that web page goes out to the Readability website and comes back in your browser with everything stripped out of it. Now, all you're reading is the text. And it makes the text have a much greater readability. It actually reminds me of the tool that I had talked about a long time ago called Instapaper, which is a tool for the iPhone, which works in a similar sort of way, only it was targeted toward reading stuff on your iPhone. You go to a website, you click on Instapaper, it saves it, and then you go into your iPhone, use that application to bring up the articles. I've done that several times. Yeah, it makes it very easy to read articles on the iPhone. Well, this Readability thing is the same thing, only for your web browser right there. That's the tool in the crib this week, Readability. And like other tools I've given you so far, it's free. All right, I'd like to close the show now with the music that goes with the video, produced by Russ Roberts. And John Papola, who's a video producer, creative director, and the economist, Russ Roberts, who does Econ Talk podcast. And I interviewed Russ Roberts a couple of years ago, one of the three interviews I've ever done on Mad Money Machine, talking about his Econ Talk show and other things. Well, they got together and produced this video called Fear the Boom and Bust. And it's a hip-hop video, a hip-hop song, where Lord John Maynard Keynes and F.A. Hayek, the two economists with opposing views, they attend a World Economic Summit, and they go head-to-head with each other about what's the right policy for the economy. Here's Fear the Boom and Bust.
John Maynard Keynes.
F.A. Hayek.
Yeah, we're opposed.
We oppose each other philosophically.
In the same studio.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it. Play low interest rates.
No, it's the animal spirits.
John Maynard Keynes wrote the book on modern macro. The man you need when the economy's off track. Depression, recession, now your question's in session. Have a seat and I'll school you in one simple lesson. Boom, 1929, the big crash. We didn't bounce back, economy's in the trash. Persistent unemployment, the result of sticky wages. Waiting for recovery,
seriously?
That's outrageous. I had a real plan, any fool can understand. The advice real simple, boost aggregate demand. C-I-G, all together gets to Y. Keep that total growing, watch the economy fly.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it. Play low interest rates.
It's the animal spirit.
You see, it's all about spending. Hear the register cha-ching. Circular flow, the dough is everything. So if that flow is getting low, doesn't matter the reason. We need more government spending. Now it's stimulus season, so forget about saving. Get it straight out of your head. Like I said, in the long run, we're all dead. Savings is destruction, that's the paradox of thrift. Don't keep money in your pocket or that growth will never lift. Because business is driven by the animal spirits. The bull and the bear, and there's reasons to fear its effects on capital investment, income, and growth. That's why the state should fill the gap with stimulus, both the monetary and the fiscal. They're equally correct. Public works, digging ditches, war has the same effect. Even a broken window helps the glass man have some wealth, the multiplier driving higher the economy's health. And if the central bank's interest rate policy tanks, a liquidity trap, that new money stuck in the banks, deficits could be the cure you've been looking for. Let the spending soar, now that you know the score. My general theories made quite an impression.
Revolution!
I transformed the econ profession. You know me, modesty, still I'm taking a bow. So say it loud and say it proud, we're all Keynesians now.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
I've made my case, Freddie H. Listen up, can you hear it?
I'll begin in broad strokes, just like my friend Keynes. His theory conceals the mechanics to change. That simple equation, too much aggregation, ignores human action and motivation. Yet it continues as a justification for bailouts, payoffs by polls with machinations. You provide them with cover to sell us a free lunch. Then all that we're left with is debt and a bunch. If you're living high on that cheap credit hog, don't look for a cure from the hair of the dog. Real savings come first if you want to invest. The market coordinates time with interest. Your focus on spending is pushing on thread. In the long run, my friend, it's your theory that's dead. So sorry there, buddy, if that sounds like invective. Prepare to get schooled in my Austrian perspective. We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it. Play low interest rates.
It's the animal spirit.
The place you should study isn't the bust. It's the boom that should make you feel leery. That's the thrust of my theory. The capital structure is key. Malinvestments wreck the economy. The boom gets started with an expansion of credit. The Fed sets rates low. Are you starting to get it? That new money is confused for real loanable funds. But it's just inflation that's driving the ones who invest in new projects like housing construction. The boom plants the seeds for its future destruction. The savings aren't real. Consumption's up too. And the grasping for resources reveals there's too few. So the boom turns to bust as the interest rates rise. For the cost of production, price signals relies. The boom was a binge, that's a matter of fact. Now it's devalued capital that makes up the slack. Whether it's the late 20s or 2005, booming bad investments seems like they'd thrive. You must save to invest, don't use the printing press, or a bust will surely follow, an economy depressed. Your so-called stimulus will make things worse. Just more of the same, more incentives perverse, and that
credit crunch ain't a liquidity trap, just a broke banking system. I'm done, that's a wrap.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free.
There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
Play low interest rates.
It's the animal spirits.
The ideas of economists and political philosophers, both when they are right and when they are wrong, are more powerful than is commonly understood. Indeed, the world is ruled by little else. Practical men who believe themselves to be quite exempt from any intellectual influence are usually the slaves of some defunct economist.
The curious task of economics is to demonstrate to men how little they really know about what they imagine they can design.
They've been going back and forth for a century. For a century.
Well, you gotta see the video. You gotta go out, go to madmanmachine.com, show 175, and click the link to get you to the YouTube video, Fear the Boom and Bust. I've watched it a couple times. The more times you watch it, the more subtleties you pick up in it. It's so funny. Keynes and Hayek appear at the Millennium Hilton Hotel at the opening of the video, and the receptionist there just loves the fact that she's seeing Keynes. Well, later in the video, when they're sitting around at the bar drinking, and all the women that are there are all admiring Keynes, and Hayek's sitting over there in the, you know, in the corner. One of the women there is the receptionist that that they saw at the Hilton. and then one of the girls takes off Hayek's horn-rimmed glasses and puts them on, and then laughs at him, and the other girl pets his bald head. So it's just so funny. So watch Fear the Boom and Bust. And it's been good to be with you. Thank you for sticking with me on this extended edition of the Mad Money Machine. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes money talk to make a Mad Money Machine. Don't forget those contacts. 571-366-7121 is where you can call me. Feedback at madmoneymachine.com is where you can email me. And somehow or other on Facebook, you can get in touch with me, either at the Mad Money Machine group page or a fan page. You can go to madmoneymachine.com and click a link there to become a fan of the Mad Money Machine. There are now something like 19 of you. That's great! I love the fact that you're clicking that link. That's great. Thanks so much, and I'll see you next time. Come back, sweet papa.